Hi, everybody. Today is Wednesday, January 12th of 2022, and we are here for Rudy's Psychic Meetup. Hi, Rudy. How's it going?
Hey, great. Glad to be back. Ready for the new year. Got over our illness after we saw you last at Christmas time. The whole family, well, actually my wife and I, not my son, my wife and I got sick over Christmas, had to cancel the travel plans. So we had the flu or whatever was going around. Maybe it's the corona, who knows. But we're recovered now. So getting back to normal.
Well, I'm looking forward to Toto Santos. So I don't know if you want to give folks a quick review. Do you guys have anything left at that boutique hotel where Teresa's doing the energy seminar?
Yeah, so my wife, I know we've posted that in the Discord. My wife is having a retreat, co-hosting it with someone else down there in from Cabo. And it's basically a seminar, energy, healing. So it's the work that she does, helping you do routines that move energy through your body. And there's all kinds of benefits to it. And so that is going to be February 9th through the 14th in Toto Santos, which is about an hour. Is it about an hour north of Cabo, I think?
Yeah, it's just all on the highway there. Yeah. I've got a place that accepts dogs, so I didn't take up a spot in the actual hotel, but I'll be up to do meetups and stuff. I'm just 8 minutes away. I'm just down the road in the surf hotel, which has good internet. So I hope to have a live stream that weekend, but I was touch and go whether or not I was going to, because I'm always worried if I go somewhere and it's not good quality that I won't be able to have a good meetup with people online. Yeah.
They have about 10, I think there's about 10 spots left. I know we've had a couple sand jammers sign up and express some interest. So it'll be fun to see some of those folks there. And so anyway, that's coming up, and maybe I'll have her at one of these shows pop on. But if you're interested, feel free to reach out to me or look in the promo room on the Discord. There's more information on it and even a link to a video of my wife kind of describing what she's going to be doing. So, yeah. You know, throughout history, world leaders have used psychic or consulted with psychic mediums, clairvoyants. They call them a lot of different things. And as I was going through this list, I was trying to figure out if there's been any examples of where a psychic or medium has their information has been used to influence world events. And I couldn't find any. But as I go through these, I want to see if anything pops to mind where you can say, oh, yes, this psychic, definitely had something to do with this event in history. But, you know, you go all the way back to the Oracle at Delphi in Greece. And this is, in BC, in the BC or before Common Era, 300 BC, they would consult with kings and all kinds of leaders. I think there's a famous quote from the king Creusus of Lydia, who went to see the Oracle of Delphi before battle and say, to see what's going to happen. And basically, he got a vague prediction that a large army would be destroyed and end up being his army. He kind of took that information the wrong way. Queen Elizabeth, and we're going to talk about this, consulted with John Dee, Queen Elizabeth I, back in the 1500s. Napoleon III, who was the nephew of Napoleon Bonaparte, he had a seances by a Scottish medium, Daniel Douglas Home, and he was a Scottish medium clairvoyant in the 19th century. Einstein had met with a famous clairvoyant of the early first part of the century, which was Jean Dennis. And she was the girl who amazed Einstein. And basically, Einstein said about her, she told me things no one could possibly know, things on which I have been working. And she demonstrated to me that she has a power to do things I cannot at this time explain. She got his endorsement. The Princess Diana, J.P. Morgan has a famous quote that millionaires, don't have astrologers, but billionaires do. Gene Dixon was one that Ronald Reagan, I think, used and, famously predicted John Kennedy's assassination, but the L.A. Times wouldn't publish that. So, Sam, as I kind of go through these examples, can you think of, or can the people on the other side show you any significant world leaders who have used information from a psychic medium to influence world events?
I know the Russian royal family, they had, remember, is it
Rasputin?
Rasputin?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that he significantly led to the downfall, actually, of the royal family. And one thing people have to keep in mind is that not everybody who does what I can do are light workers. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing I'd have to say early on in my life, whenever, and I'm not saying I never played with the Ouija board, because as a teenager, I did, like a young teenager, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have anybody to be like, oh no, that's bad, don't do that. I played games like Light as a Feather when I was at overnights with the other little girls. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that everything always went crazy when I was there. Like, you know, a lot of times the Ouija boards wouldn't work, but with me, it was like, it was crazy. It was scary almost. And I remember one time, the other girl, she took her fingers off and it still kept going with my hands on it. And you're supposed to have two people.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah. And that scared everybody. I don't think I played with the Ouija board after that, because I could actually feel like that. It was like a gravitational pull. And it was like, and it was like, I could feel it pulling in here too, like in my chakra there. I didn't know what it was called at the time. And then I remember one time playing Light as a Feather. And I remember I lived in Florida. So I was probably like 11 years old, because I was only young when I lived there for a couple of years. And I remember that they used to get me to tell the story, like to be the one at the head of the person. And you used to tell a story about how they died and, and, you know, so like I would tell the story and everything. And then everyone would start lifting and be like, and then she was light as a feather, and then we were all, and then she was like almost floating. Like she was on our fingertips. It was wild. And then I was like, okay, I think that this is a game, but this is, and people would tell me that never happened before. And then, of course, you're thinking to yourself, well, is this happening because of me? Mm-hmm. You know, and you kind of step away from it. So it is easy to get into sort of the darker realm, even if you don't know what you're doing, because they respond immediately. They notice who you are and they respond immediately, and they want you to serve them, and they will give you answers that you seek, but it's only to lead you off a cliff. And so when you were talking about that, you know, the people who were seeking out, you know, psychic mediums and changing world history, that one kept coming up, and the people were telling me, they were like, oh yeah, but he was evil. He was a bad medium, and his father was like the devil. So they got sucked into that. So you have to be really careful that you have to make sure that is the person serving source, you know, are they, you know, you have to be really careful about the money part as a medium, because, you know, you're supposed to do what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to, like early on, I had somebody approach me through someone else, who was going to pay me a lot of money. And that was before I even started my Patreon, but I did have, you know, I'd started my YouTube channel, and it was pretty obvious in the beginning there was something going on there. Yeah. But they approached me, but they said, the deal is that if I introduce you to this person and you're not allowed to be public, like you're not allowed to share your knowings with the world. It was kind of like, they just want you to tell them what's going to happen, but you can't tell anyone else. Right.
Where, yeah. Like, there's usually some sort of NDA associated, because, and that's what I was, as I was doing some of this research, a lot of, you know, corporations or entrepreneurs will retain psychic mediums on a consultant basis and pay them quite heavily for that information. But it's interesting you talk about Rasputin, because David mentioned that in the comments, and he hadn't come up in my research at all. And I don't, you know, he just wasn't in any of the lists that I pulled up, but he's one that he ingratiated himself with Nicholas II, who was the last emperor of Russia. Yes. And he got in through he healing. Supposedly he had these healing abilities, and he was, I believe he helped the Nicholas's children. And then all of these people who have used, and even we'll talk about John Dee, they ingratiate themselves with these leaders through, as you say, some sort of knowledge, and they gain influence and power. And then that's when they're able to, you know, just a little bit of information, throw people off course and do the damage. But it's this fascination that people have. And especially you go back through ancient times and even today, people want that information from the other side. And when you're in that mode, you're in that believing mind and thinking that everything you get is pure and true, when really you don't think you're being manipulated. But John Dee did kind of have some discernment. So let's talk about that. This is a topic from December, I think. Somebody had brought a question about the Spanish Armada, And we thought, let's take a closer look and see if you get anything on John Dee. So he lived from 1527 to about 1608. He was an English mathematician, astronomer, astrologer, teacher, occultist, and alchemist. And he was the court astronomer and advisor to Elizabeth I. Spent a lot of time on alchemy, divination, and hermetic philosophy. He was also known as the Queen's Conjurer. He would kind of do these magic ceremonies in the Queen's Court. Some say he was the inspiration for the character Prospero in Shakespeare's The Tempest. And if you look at his picture, he kind of looks like almost like Dumbledore or any of these wizards, right, that you see from in a lot of these movies that we have today. And he had amassed a large library. But he was really a committed scholar, and he basically slept about 4 hours a night, but he just had this voracious appetite for knowledge, and he would study all these things. But some of the things that John Dee did, he lectured on algebra at the University of Paris. He introduced the signs of addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. He was England's leading scientist for a while. He was an advocate of the controversial theory of heliocentrism, which the all the planets revolve around the sun. He brought astronomy out of obscurity, and he even taught... developed navigation systems based on that. I think he even did Queen Elizabeth's chart and recommended on when her coronation date should be. But he wrote a lot of papers, all kinds of things. But basically, Sam, he's one that in his career, he then turned to the occult because he wanted so much knowledge, but he wanted knowledge from angels that you couldn't get out of books. And so he teamed up with someone named Edward Kelly, who was kind of what they call a scryer, and he would read the crystal ball. And it sounds like Edward Kelly was actually the psychic. So, Sam, as I talk about John Dee and some of these examples of things he did, do you get anything on his life? Did he have any special abilities, or was he one of these people who was just very smart and able to influence and people, that kind of thing?
Well, one of the things that caught my attention as you told the story is the voracious appetite that he had for knowledge. And that if somebody asked me, I think my child might be a psychic medium, have some abilities, what are some of the signs? And I would say, okay, well, they have a voracious appetite for knowledge. They just want to know about everything all the time. They'll read books, or they'll just, randomly search the internet. You'd almost think that they're, borderline Asperger's as far as, being hyper-focusing on something. But that's, again, I think that a lot of times, like the one that was born in 1527, I feel like what limited him was the time that he was born in. It was the same with Edgar Cayce. If anyone asked me about Edgar Cayce, I'd say, well, I think he was probably the most in tune psychic medium who did actually work for Source. And the only thing that limited him really was, he only had grade 6 education. Right. So there, he had a lot of life experience and stuff, but oh my goodness, if he had been born sometime in the, in the late 20th century or the early 21st century, imagine if someone like that had access to the internet. And also another thing is that a lot of people who are probably the most successful mediums are not the ones who were interested in fame or fortune. Some people, they would just do anything to be famous. They want to be a YouTuber. They want people to look at them. They want people to like them. You'll find it's like I've used the example before. I like how the archdiocese, the priest who's in charge of all of the priests who do the exorcisms, and he said, I'd be afraid, for anybody who actually wanted the job, right? You have to give it to somebody who doesn't want who's not seeking this type of fame or thing. And I also think that there's always a danger if you're not careful. Like I said, mediums, they walk a tightrope, yep. Right? And some people will get these strong abilities because they're doing divination and they're conjuring, right, but they're not getting the information from Source, which is all of our family who've passed over ahead of us, who are part of, they become part of God. They're we're all light beings, right? And this is just where I get the information from. I get it from, like my dad and, my my grandfather and, you know, some of your people who've passed, you know, they give me information. That's who they are. That's who Source is. But you walk a tightrope, right? And the light is on the right and dark is on the left. And if you fall off that tightrope into the darkness, and it's usually because you want more exactness, more fame. It would be like if I was trying to call cryptos, like every single one, like right to the, you know, just having this obsession with making all this money and, oh, you know, I don't make millionaires, I make billionaires, like this type of this type of ideology, instead of being, you know what, people will get the amount that they're supposed to get. You know, let's have faith and understand that not everybody's supposed to have, you know, $100 million, and people have different goals. So just accept, you know, what is there for you in the crypto sphere. They obviously have me here for a reason. You obviously found me for a reason. You know, let's just ride this. Let's ride these rapids together. And I'll be like that Freddy guy who led me through the F5 rapids in the Simon River, Little Simon River. I think that's what it's called. The Fraser River in British Columbia. And, you know, you got to have faith in the person who's steering the boat in the back and know that they know what they're doing.
Yeah. And here's a picture of John D. I'll share. You know, he's one that it struck me as was on that line of he wanted influence, and he would even use, like, I think other people with abilities to try to get information. But the most famous one is the Spanish Armada. And so the Spanish Armada sailed in, I think it was 1588. There were about 130 ships under the command of the Duke of Medina, with the purpose of escorting an army from Flanders to invade England. Now, when the Spanish ships approached England, Dee suggested that they wait, correctly predicting that the Spanish fleet would be severely affected by storms. So it'd be better to keep the English ships at bay. So most of the Spanish ships were lost or damaged, and when the storm subsided, then the English ships got rid of the rest of them. And it was one of John Dee's, you know, probably his best moments. The rumor, the legend is that he cast a spell on the Spanish Armada, but it seems like, you know, most likely it's one of these don't engage in a land war with Russia in the wintertime. You know, August is hurricane season, I believe. So what do you think happened with this, Sam? Did he cast a spell? Was this just kind of common sense that the odds were with him, that they were probably going to get a storm? What do you think happened?
I think that he saw that a storm was coming and he gave instructions. And this is the other thing too, why it's important when, if you have a child, for example, who has abilities, a lot of times they will see stuff and then they'll think they made it happen. Right. Cause in your childish mind, you're thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I wish that upon her, you know, cause she was hollering at me and making me feel, you know, small and afraid, and that I wish terrible things on her, and I saw that coming and then it happened. And then you feel like you're responsible for it. But then as you grow and mature in your abilities, you realize that you don't have abilities to sort of quote unquote cast a spell. You know, you don't have those abilities. This is not something that's been given to any of us. And I don't care who the medium is or who they, what they claim they are. It's like, look, that's completely against the rules. You're not allowed to do that. You can access the ethos and they'll tell you that storm is coming, you know, or they'll tell somebody, like, I feel like I knew the exact right time to leave Canada because it was like the door was just closing, you know, everyone was getting all crazy about the Omicron. And then we got through the I-95, and, you know, a week later people were trapped in the I-95. You know, that would have been a disaster for us because we wouldn't have been anywhere close to home. There would be no friend or family that we could call to come and get us, you know. And anyways, that's just an example of, as far as timing goes and, you know, accessing the ethos to set that timing. But yeah, under no circumstances, you know, can I cast a spell or do any of this kind of like witchcraft stuff. And if you could, you really shouldn't, because I don't think humans are, I don't think they have a mind for that. I think they would just get too crazy with power. And I don't care who you are, because, you know, at some point I'd want to use it to make somebody who was evil and bad fall flat on their face, or,
you know, or my thought on that, like someone say, well, I'll teach you how to cast spells. And it's like, well, no, because it's probably something else. If it does happen, something else is making something happen and you're not really doing it. And you really don't want to enlist the power, the, the powers from the other side, because there's always a cost, as David says. Freestar writes, hi, Sam and Rudy. A researcher and author named Ralph Ellis has some compelling research on the origins of Jesus. He relates to him as a king of Edessa, whose royal mother was exiled. He says Jesus of Edessa held three royal bloodlines, including to Cleopatra, and was the strongest contender for the emperor of Rome. He staged an uprising and was even crucified. He says his story was edited to what we have today to bury the truth about him. Do you get anything on this? So, Sam, do you think Jesus was some sort of royalty with claim to the throne of Rome as the emperor?
No. Okay. No, I think the story about him is true, that he was the son of a carpenter and he was, you know, it was like there was a lot of jealousy and he dared to speak against what were they called? The Pharisees, mm-hmm. right? So the Pharisees are the ones who arranged to have him to go after him because they were jealous. And because he pointed out their greed, and he would tell the stories like about, you know, the rich people who went in and made a big scene about all the money they were giving, and, you know, and the poor woman who just gave everything that she had to God. She, all she had was two pennies or two shekels, but that's what she put in. And then he pointed out that, you know, what she gave was so much more than what these rich people who gave a big show of it. And the Pharisees, they didn't like that. You know, the rich people, they didn't like that. But thankfully, he did make friends with one rich person in particular named Nicodemus. And I personally believe from the story that I saw that he was taken down from the cross, that they bribed the Roman soldiers and they took him down. And that's how he didn't actually get right. He didn't actually get, he didn't, like that, that's a fairy tale. Like that's not, I don't care how powerful you are as a medium, because I believe that's all Jesus was. I told my husband that today. I said, I think Jesus was just a very powerful medium who also had healing abilities. And he had an assignment that he had to complete while he was here. And then when he was completed, he ran off to Paris, him and Mary Magdalene, yeah. And they had a family. So I would not be surprised if in our lifetime we find that there are people who have the genetics of Jesus of Nazareth. And I hope okay. I didn't offend anybody, but I think you guys are here because you just want to hear what I believe is the truth. Again, if you believe something completely different, awesome, good for you. I mean, we're still going to get along just fine.
Yeah. Classic victim of a disinformation campaign, right? One of the, from way back when. Yeah. All right. Raymond has an interesting question here. Hello, Sam and Rudy. There's a building in San Francisco, the Millennium Tower, that is leaning and continues to lean at a faster rate each year, currently 3 inches. Is it going to be fixed or will it be abandoned? It won't fall, will it? Thanks. Sam, have you heard about this? It's a, they built this tower. It was, they sold for these, people had these condos. It was very exclusive. And then because of the way it was built, it just started to tilt and they've done all these things to try to prop it up. What do you see for the Millennium Tower in San Francisco? Will it eventually end in disaster?
Actually, you know what? I don't know my geography that well. San Francisco is in the northern part, right?
Well, central, so kind of the middle, central. North middle. And that's a place where during the World Series, there was an earthquake years ago. And that where part of there was a bunch of damage there because of the way San Francisco is built on kind of like, I don't know if it's like swampland, but it's very, very sandy soil underneath.
Okay. Well, then that would explain I think that I definitely would not want to be in that building or anywhere under it when the Cascadian earthquake hits. Because that's going to do a lot of damage. It'll do some damage to like Northern California. It generally probably won't make too many problems in San Francisco, because one of the things about the earthquake in the early 19th or in the early 20th century is that a lot of the buildings were destroyed and then they were rebuilt with, sturdier, better rules sort of thing. And then they have consistently, change the laws to make things more earthquake resilient. But that tower, that was the only information I got, was that its toppling would be from an earthquake.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, and that's scary. And as I think Bradley J said, they didn't go to bedrock. They just used friction pilings and ultimately saved some money that way. And it's going to Yeah, I would not want to be in that building. Wayne S. writes, the Orlando authorities are looking into Bob Saget's recent death. I don't normally pay any attention to personalities, but I have the feeling this is another vax-related death. What are your thoughts, please? Thank you for being with us.
So isn't that interesting? When we first heard about it, the impression was that maybe he had committed suicide because he was like in a hotel room by himself. And that's what they do a lot of times. They don't want their family to find them. But I believe I was actually talking to him.
Oh, interesting.
And he told me that he had a heart attack. Right. And that's what I said about it. And then it came out that they found him and that he actually had his hand over his heart. So maybe he did start to feel like some pain there and died. Yeah,
they said it was a sudden medical incident. They didn't, I don't know if they said what it was yet.
Yeah. I bet you they're going to say that it was a heart attack because that's what I was told, that it was a heart attack. Now, all that being said, I do know that there are some people who do end up passing away because remember we talked about this with the vaccination before. I said that there's no danger generally with the vaccination. It's just that some people had an anomaly in their DNA that reacted badly with the vaccination. So all that we were doing was really shifting the deaths of one group of people who might be from COVID to other people who would die because of the vaccination. But it's not like this massive, you know, planes are falling out of the sky because people are dying of heart attacks from, you know, it's not like, oh, one in every 100. It's like, it's a very small, small number of people. And so I don't believe that he was one of the people that was affected by this. And I know I feel bad that people are making a big deal out of it because actually this morning I was going through Facebook and I saw that somebody had posted something about Bob Saget and how he had gotten the booster. And like, I believe he's still talking to me. And he told me, he was like, no, that's not true. And I was looking at it and I said, you know, that's kind of a shame that they're going to talk about that when really he just died of a heart attack. I mean, it's not like the guy was 35. And I'm sorry to say that sometimes it's not everybody's walk in life to, you know, to even live to see 70 years old.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what they call the silent killer. You can have some plaque break free, clog an artery in the wrong spot, and there's nothing they can do. I don't care, you know, yeah, how much you try to prevent it. All right. Thanks, Sam. Tiki writes, hi, Sam and Rudy. I was wanting to know if you can speak or if you can ask peeps on the other side about Teresa Caputo, the Long Island medium. I watch her on TV. Is she a real medium? If not, what is she tapping into? Thank you so much.
Yeah, actually she is. And I used to train myself watching her on TV because I would sometimes, I remember there was one in particular where this guy had been shot, you know, and I knew that. And I even said it out loud. I said, oh, he was shot. And then she goes, was he shot? Right. And so what I was doing is I was practicing because I was pulling out the information that she was getting. And I wouldn't bother doing that if the person was not a real medium. So that's how I know she's a real medium, because I was actually utilizing her TV program. And I mean, people are all different mediums to do different things. I think, you know, I think that she's in the right place where, you know, she's to meet with people one-on-one and connect them with their loved ones. And, you know, me being in finance for over 30 years and reading voraciously about economics. And I mean, even though my education is like a Bachelor of Arts major in English, I still took micro and macroeconomics and business law and all of these, like, you used to take your bird courses, but my bird courses were all these business courses and economics and things like that. So again, you know, that's the path that I'm on, whereas she's on a different path, which is to, you know, to be a medium that lowers people's anxiety and helps them with the pain that they may be feeling as a result of their family member passing away and unfinished business.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you've hit, like, she's one, and then I think there was an example of somebody on TV, but helps solves murder mysteries, So there are there are mediums. It is neat to see that get out there on TV that are actually legitimate. They're not all con people, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, like that Tyler, the Hollywood medium. Oh my gosh, he's just lovely and he's so mature for his age. Yeah. I was like, "Oh my gosh, he does such a great job for like a young fella who is a medium." But you know, knowing that like his mom isn't a medium, but I think his grandmother was. So but his mother believed in mediums and she didn't poo-poo it or try to, you know, oh, don't talk about that or anything. You know, she didn't try to shut him down. She would encourage him. And there's another guy, he has this crazy Boston accent. I love listening to him because he tells the story about when they would come to him in his room and his mother's like, is it grandma? What's she saying? And I'm like, oh my God. And here he is scared to death because dead people are talking to him when he's a little kid, right? And once the mother realized that he had like the gift, right? Because only certain people in the family will get it, right? You don't know until they start, you know, talking about it when they're little kids, if they have it or not. But oh yeah, there's plenty of good mediums out there who are, you know, light workers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Sam. Huddle Queen writes, I had a dream on Monday morning about someone who passed in November. The person was wearing a particular piece of clothing that they would have worn roughly 5 years ago when they were in a better state of mental health, unlike the last few years of their life. I felt this may have been symbolic of their passage through end of life review. Do people ever come in our dreams and show us they've made it through that process? Thank you.
Oh, yeah. And as a matter of fact, like when my dad died, he went to visit my sister and he gave her a hug. She told me, I said, was it like a technicolor dream? You know, where you can almost see like the molecules. And she was like, yes. And I was like, I said, oh yeah, that was really dad. He was really coming to say goodbye to you. And my daughter, who you guys know is Spencer, has abilities. And she said that, you know, we called him Papa Out West because she used to spend time with him whenever I'd go up to Whistler to go to snowboard. And then a friend of mine used to take me to the Super Bowl party every year up at Whistler in February. But I would leave her with my dad. And so she knew her Papa Out West. And she said that he actually patted her on the head, like he came to say goodbye to her when she was in bed. You know, so yeah, it is possible for people. I find it's actually more common if somebody doesn't have mediumistic abilities, it's very common for them to be able to see and hear their family members, especially a parent. You know, I find that you may have never experienced this in your life, but then when one of your parents passes away because that bond is so close, that usually you'll have a dream, not all the time, but I find that's more common. So yeah, Huddle Queen, you know, that could be that person, you know.
And is it after they've done their review, or do you think they ever come in before they actually go through their end of life review?
Oh, okay. So people go through their end of life review like right away before they come back here. It's almost like immediate, right? And the only time it doesn't happen is when you get stuck in between. And oh, believe me, if someone's stuck in between, you know it, because it's like scary, spooky, ghost stuff.
They're not going to come say goodbye to you if they're stuck in between. They once they've crossed over and done the review, then they come back and say goodbye. Was that a good way to think about it?
Yeah, I didn't know this until I had a situation with that billionaire who was murdered in Toronto. Him and his wife. Yeah, I don't know. It was in the news and stuff like that. I actually know what happened to them. And he tells me to talk to the daughter, his daughter. So I can't talk about it here. I'd like to get in touch with her and tell her what happened. But to make a long story short, within a few days of him being killed, I know that he was wandering the in-between because he actually showed up. And I turned and I looked, we were watching it on the news, and then there he was all of a sudden, but he was really creepy. And I turned and I looked at my husband and I said, that man's here. I said, and it's really, really creepy. And what I would do is I would hear what he was saying and stuff, but I wouldn't acknowledge him, because I always learned that when you get these people who are stuck in between, like, don't talk to them, they're not light beings yet, and they're trapped in the in-between, and you don't want them holding on or following you. Like, you want them to go to the light. And then about 2 weeks later, he came to me, and he was a shiny light being. So he did make it across to the other side. He had a delay, which I'm not surprised, for, like I said, various reasons I could go into, but not on a public live stream where I haven't spoken to his daughter yet. I just try to be respectful when people have died, you know, not to go into too much, because it's not like they came to me and said, can you connect me with my dad? I mean, he showed up to me. And then my friend called me like a year later, and she's like, oh my God, they interviewed this reporter who wrote a book about it. And he found out a whole bunch of stuff from the police, stuff that you had told me right after he died. So she was freaking out over that. And I was like, well, I told you I was talking to him, because he came back 2 weeks later and he actually apologized to me for showing up in his creepy state, his in-between state, which wasn't his fault. I mean, he didn't know what was going on. He didn't do it on purpose. It wasn't until after, probably at the end of his end of life review, they showed him that he kind of scared and shocked me a little bit, because, you know, I was just a new medium and I didn't really know what was going on. But I do believe that, you know, people can be delayed. And if you do run into that situation, if there's any mediums in the room here, like, don't talk to them. Do not acknowledge them at all. And they will just go away. If I say anything at all to them, I tell them to go to the light.
Thanks, Sam. Our next question from Solar Dragon. Hi, Sam and Rudy. What are some suggestions for us to quit taking things personal regarding our personal lives, perhaps for sensitive people who have had trauma or get defensive and want to lighten up? Thank you. Much love.
Yeah, Freestar's got some great advice there. And she's got some good tips about, you know, trying to look at it through, you know, fresh eyes. I do not underestimate the gift that was given to me, not really giving a crap about what other people think of me. Like, really, I mean, it's just, that's been a gift for me, not to be concerned, not to try to be please everybody. And I think that the best advice that was given to me when I was very young, I was about 20, 21 years old, and the lady that I used to work for, whose business I ended up buying, told me that when you sleep on things, she said, you know, she goes, if someone asks you something and it's like a, you know, it's a big deal, she said, don't respond to it immediately. Tell them that you have to sleep on it. And that way there, at least they know that what they're asking you to do or the information they're looking for, that you're taking it very seriously. You know, so I just would recommend that if you're somebody who gets defensive, if you're overly sensitive, because you know what, that you can be a pain in the butt to people when you're like that all the time, right? Like, you're always making it about you. So stop it, right?
Yeah.
People are like, I wasn't talking about you. I wasn't thinking about, you know, if you knew how little people thought of you, you would be relieved, right? And see, I already know, because I can read minds and stuff, and I'm like, oh, I'm so like unimportant to them. Like, yes, sure, I tripped and I fell on my face, but they've already, and they laughed, but they've already forgotten about it. It's not like they're telling their friends when they go to the party tonight, they'll have forgotten about it. Because again, you have to remember that, you know, your life is, and your situation is important to you, but it's not to other people. They have their own life and they have their own stuff going on. So that will help as well. So sleep on things and then realize that, you know, you are the main actor in your life, but you're just a background player, you know, with mostly everybody else's. So just think about it that way.
Good advice, Sam. Thanks. Our next question comes from Roman. Hello, Sam and Rudy. Any insights on whether the Netherlands is going to enforce a mandatory vaccination in the future?
Now, no, I do not think so. And I'll tell you why. A couple of years ago, someone has said to me when I was talking about, you know, with France, with the Gilets Jaunes, and I saw it spreading throughout all of Europe, you know, and somebody said, oh, is the Netherlands, are they going to have that as well? And I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, the Netherlands is definitely going to be turning upside down. And so I think that they will know better than to try to enforce a mandatory vaccination, because they're already getting enough pushback as it is. And they already have like hundreds of thousands of people like actually getting out on the street and, you know, starting to fight against this ideology. And it's the fact that it just keeps going on and on. It's like, oh, now the booster's not good enough, or the two shots aren't good enough anymore. Now we have a booster and a fourth one and a fifth one. You're just like, okay, enough. Just get away from me. Just get away from me.
That's what I was telling my wife today. How many times does someone have to lie to you before you decide, you know what, I'm not going to listen to you anymore?
Yeah, talk to the hand because the face isn't listening.
All right. Cat Lady AZ writes, hi, Sam and Rudy. It appears people are definitely waking up. However, a lot of fear and anger vibes are extremely, extremely palpable. How long do you see this intense transition lasting?
Okay, so you can probably hear the church bell.
Yeah, the church bells, right? 6 o'clock.
I hit the mute button, but it's time for mass. So it's 6 o'clock here, and they just ring that. And you know what? And they ring it by hand, too. You know that. Uh-huh. Right? Okay, so a lot, you know, it's interesting, Cat Lady. We were talking about that today, and about the fact that, you know, there's a lot of anger. Like, for example, fights at football games. You never used to see that. It's like people just don't even know how to behave anymore. I would say like 2022 is going to be like the worst year ever. And then we'll be starting to come out of it. And it's just going to be, like I said, just the severe economic, you know, whiplash that's going to be kicking everybody's butt into shape. I mean, I read an article where Jordan Peterson said, you know, open the damn country before, you know, Canadians break something that they can't get back, you know, and it's where, you know, you're pretty close to the edge of it. And, you know, the damage it's doing to a lot of the third world countries, I mean, they really are the ones who take it on the chin. So if you find things are bad in your state or your locale in your Western country, know that in the third world countries, it's even worse. So like I said, I would just, you know, batten down the hatches for 2022. It's going to be wild. And I feel like we'll start coming out of it in 2023. And we'll start to see that turnaround. But, you know, some countries have done so much damage. I mean, they may never come back. They may end up being at the bottom of the rung for a while. And other countries, it'll take them like between 4 and 10 years to, you know, get back to where they were. And others, like I said, the demographics are just totally and completely against them, and they just won't be able to come back.
Yeah. And people will break down, and that's part of the reaction when you wake up and realize you've been lied to for so long about so many things, that's a natural reaction. So I think, people will react all kinds of ways as the year goes on. Kit Totoro writes, when a person dies suddenly in an accident, would you know if they feel any pain or their soul is taken out safely before the actual occurrence? My friend didn't make it to the new year. Sorry to hear about that. He died tragically hit by a car on December 29th. Thanks for any insight.
Yeah, actually, in early days, I remember being on the Discord channel and some people wrote me about their friend's son. Like, I try not to get into, I mean, we've got a big enough group of people now. I try not to get into, oh, you know, this, my brother's mother, sister's cousin wants to know this. Then I'm like, no, tell them to join the Sam Jammers. Okay. I don't want to get into expanding it too much, but you know, it was in earlier days. We had a smaller crew. And this couple wrote about their friends whose son had just, it was their nephew actually, had just been killed in a car accident. And then the nephew, he appeared to me right away. And I asked a few things to confirm that it was him. And they said, yes, you know, that sounds like him. And then I said, well, he's telling me, I said, are they imagining, like, I guess the steering wheel impaled him? And that's what they kept running over and over in their mind, was that he would feel that and that he would be there and he would be struggling in pain, almost like when you, you know, step on a mouse to squash it, you know, and it's wriggling, you know, that's how they were imagining it. And they just couldn't get it out of their head. And that's what he was showing me. And like you're not hysterical on the other side, you're in bliss, right? But he was showing me that he was pulled out of his body before the actual impact. And he said, they did pull my soul out before. So I didn't feel anything. I have no memory of it at all. You know, please tell my parents that I'm okay. He was showing me like what their loop, their mind loop was. And they said, yes, it was a head on. And, you know, the car did sort of end up on him. And yeah.
Yeah. You hear that a lot with people that had near death experiences where they talk about, you know, they died, but they talk about being taken out of their body, but and not feeling any pain. So that's, it is comforting. I think it's more comforting for us, right?
Yeah.
All right. Next question is from Michelle. Hello, Sam. You mentioned life review at the end. What happens to people who have a bad life review? Do they go to hell, Christian belief, or are they reincarnated into some low position in life, Hindu belief? Thanks, Michelle.
That's a really great question, Michelle. And of course, these are questions that I have where I glean it when I'm running from here to there and getting information because I'm very curious in regards to these things. So what happens is that there is actually no hell. I would describe the hell as being caught in between. So when you die, if you've lived a life that you all you've done is hurt people and cause pain, you're not going to be confident about what's waiting for you on the other side. And you will reject going to the light, right? And for some people, like eventually they do cross, like that man. I will tell you the one I was talking about earlier that I felt like he was severely mentally ill. Yeah. And so when he appeared to me and he was caught in between, he was still severely mentally ill and deranged and babbling and talking about things. And he was looking for his wife, actually. And she had crossed over to the light like immediately, right? So she wasn't anywhere to be found in the in-between, right? And then I think that what happened is that he probably realized where he was and that the only way that he was going to see her was to go to that light. But again, you know, I think that, and I'm not saying that he was bad or anything. I'm just saying that, you know, he was deranged and this was cause for confusion for him. Just like in the same way that if people are killed suddenly and unexpectedly, sometimes they'll be left wandering around as well. Yeah. But eventually they do go to the light. But more so than anything, a lot of the people that I've run across who are caught in between, you know, we're like gangster type people, you know, where they murdered people with impunity and they cheated, they lied, they screwed around on their wives and didn't support their children and just did everything bad possible in this life. And then, you know, maybe somebody murdered them.
Yeah.
And those people tend to get caught in between and they don't want to cross over because they feel like there's judgment there and there's hell, but there's not. There's not judgment in hell. It's like you go through your end of life review, you learned where you went wrong and you see it without without the human eyes, without the human point of view. You see it for what it is and then you're washed clean and you're a light being again. And a lot of people would be, you know, upset to know that about that potentially could even happen to people like Hitler. But the other thing you have to remember is that some people who are so completely evil here on this plane, they are still wandering around in the in-between. So okay. To me, that would be like, I guess the Catholics call it purgatory. I mean, they weren't that exactly. Far off, were they?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think what you said, once you get over, maybe you don't graduate with your soul group or you might, it's kind of like being held back a grade sometimes.
You, back of the line. Yeah, you get to the back of the line. You're definitely not getting, when you go back, you totally missed it again. So that, you know, 68 years or that 73 years or whatever that you spent on that side, what a total waste of time that was. You just get to the back of the line and hopefully we'll give you a different set of cards. Like we'll deal you a different set of cards and then maybe you'll do a better job, but here's your life. Here's what went wrong.
All right. Arcane Voodoo just saying hi there. Wasn't sure what kind of questions to ask. So Cat Lady says these are woo-woo questions, alien, spiritual, all things non-crypto. And you even do a little bit of current events, but mainly it's woo-woo stuff we talk about here. All right. Michelle, I think this is another question for Michelle. Same thing we already talked about. So let's move on to Sean's question. Hi, Sam and Rudy. We have touched on this before, but can you explain the elemental realm, fairies, gnomes, dragons, etc., and what role or dimensions they are from, and are they earth energies like angels, are beings of pure light? My great aunt had a brass fairy who she said was very lucky, and as a small child I was fascinated with say hello to great Auntie Gertrude if she comes in. Oh, thank you both. P.S. She was a jolly, lovely lady. So, Sam, yeah, what are the, like, when you think about these realms, these elementals, is there a way you can describe kind of where they exist that in a way that we can understand it?
Well, I have a hard time understanding that one myself, because, I mean, I didn't honestly believe in fairies, gnomes, mermaids. I didn't believe in any of them at all. But apparently they exist. And I went through the awakening where my veil was lifted and I realized what I could do. And that was in April of 2018. Then I did, you know, become aware that there are elementals, and there are many things that are, it's on the fringes of that in-between world or realm. So it's kind of hard to explain, where it's like, okay, there's the deep part of the you know, the in-between, which is really bad. And then there's sort of the outer realm of that. And that's where the elementals hang out. And it's just, like I said, there's all kinds of different things in there. And some of them are not necessarily good or bad. Just like, for example, here on the planet, you know, you might come across a lion and it may devour you, but it's not because it's bad. It's because it's a lion and that's right. Its job. So not all things in the in-between are bad. Some of them are just neutral. And I just refer to them as, you know, elementals.
Okay. Almost, I was thinking like the edge of a lake where there's some creatures like an alligator, crocodile, can kind of go in water, out of water. Some are only in the water, some are on the land, and some are in the air. Kind of that, maybe that's a good analogy.
Yeah, that's a very good analogy, because sometimes you will see them on this side of things, because they do have some magical abilities. But I don't really know much about them, because again, you know, I wouldn't say I have a narrow view of things or a one track mind as far as being a medium. It's just that there's some things that just are not as important for me to know about. So they don't necessarily, you know, share that information.
You have to make sure we hold onto our portfolios through the next year. That's your main job right now. All right. Thanks, Sam. Sean writes, "Hi, Sam and Rudy. It just came as a knowing that the different realms are different vibrations, layers like string theory, and you can tune into these different vibrations. Am I way off the mark? Science meets woo-woo, LOL. Thanks, Sean Pease. I've just seen it like a rainbow, curved and endless vibrations all leading to source." It's a good analogy as well.
Yeah, vibrations. Yeah, the in-between is definitely a much lower vibration. And that's how you can tell. When people are like, oh, you can't tell if these things are evil or not, I'm like, oh, really? I can't tell? It's like, if you were me, you would be able to tell, because it's, they can't hide it because their vibrations are so low. Yeah. And you feel that, like in here, like you know immediately that the vibrations are too low to be, you know, from source or anything good.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Sam. Pony Pete writes, "Dear both, what is your estimation on the number of extraterrestrials among us, or let's say people with special DNA? All the best." And Sam, I'll add in, do you think there are hybrids where people have some alien DNA?
No. Okay. No, so I don't believe that.
They're not among us. They're the abduction programs, all of that. That's just made up.
I wouldn't say it's made up. I do think that there have been some, you know, scientific experiments going on, that the aliens who've come here have been scientists. And their general rule of thumb is they're not to interfere with our day-to-day lives, you know, and that is the rule. They're not allowed to do that. But some, just like you get groups of aliens that will, you know, take over, you know, entire planets of people for their own, you know, like the Anunnaki who came here to mine gold and other precious metals. I mean, that was totally against the rules. And then they dickered with our DNA so that they could make humans who would be smart enough to do their slave work that they needed, you know, complex tasks.
Yeah.
You know, that was against the rules. So, you know, it does happen.
I think,
but I don't think they're walking around here on this planet. I think that if anything, they would have been taken away with them. Like, are they trying to figure out human alien breeds? For sure. Has it been tried? Yes. You know, they are trying to harvest like an egg and sperm and thing and doing stuff like that, but they don't put them out here in society. Okay. I mean, they take them back.
Yeah, that's where some of the theories come in, that you know, their population, they're training these hybrids how to function in society. I think Dr. David Jacobs in the threat kind of details all these hypnotic regressions he's done where people claim to have seen their offspring on a ship and then that they're somehow being populated. But yeah, obviously no way to prove that. It's just kind of those theories that kind of, you know, end up in this cottage industry of the alien lore. All right, we're about at the bottom of the hour, so let's try and get through the last. We got about 10 questions. So next one from Samantha Dell. Dear Sam and Rudy, at the age of 3, I started telling people I was here to battle for my creator. I literally thought my battle would be with a sword. At age 9, I was very sick. The beings came to me and told me that they were not going to let me die. I was here for a purpose. I have come close to death's door several times. Some of these times a voice has clearly said to me, you're not going to die. Are there other people on the earth plane that feel they are here for a specific purpose? So Sam, what do you think about that? That where people are kind of, I don't know, it's almost like they're guardian angels or in close contact with them throughout their life.
Yeah, I think that there are a group of people who are here for the Great Awakening and they are here on assignment. So that's what they're doing here. I mean, most people are just here to live their life and learn lessons and, you know, get ready to go on to the next stage on the other side and hopefully have done better than what they had done when they were here before. But there are people who already went through all of that and went through their reincarnations and then they were done with the earth realm, right? They reached did as well as they could. And then they came back for the Great Awakening. This has been, we've been waiting a long time for this to come. And many of the people, I believe, will manifest that with abilities like what I have. So I wouldn't just take somebody at their, I wouldn't take them just at their word. I would always say, okay, well, you know, prove to me that you're, because they wouldn't send you here like just to not do anything. You'd have to be able to have some abilities to utilize it towards the great collective so that people can find some peace and lower their anxiety. So they might be able to, for example, do some healing work. I'm not saying everybody would be a medium, but you know what I mean? It's just like there's, you know, and just to keep that in mind too, Samantha probably already knows that if she's, you know, been around this realm for a little while, she would know that probably about a good 95% of the people who claim, there we go again with the church.
Yeah. you're really late for church.
No, really late. But anyways, 95% of the people who claim to be psychic mediums are not, because again, you know, people have something called ideas of grandeur, and this is a mental illness. And so that's why I always tell people, like, never take anyone at their word. They can tell you they have healing, that they have abilities, or whatever. I'm all about, okay, prove it to me, and then we can work together, you know? Yeah.
Okay. Light Green Eyes was able to join us live. Hi, Sam and Rudy. Can you tell me, in the woo-woo world, what is a watcher and a gatekeeper? I think I've seen or come across both of them. One was scary, one was not. I also had a dream that a cow hugged me. What the heck does that mean? Thank you. I don't know about that cow. I got nothing.
Yeah. Oh, listen, sometimes you have like the craziest dreams, like Green Eyes. And even I'm like, oh my God, that can't be from the other realm at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say a watcher and a gatekeeper. I think that those are labels that were given by somebody that I have not read any of their information. I know that people have different roles on the other side. So I think maybe a watcher would be like somebody who maybe predicts the future and warns people. And then the gatekeeper would be more like a sentinel, somebody who is like more like guarding the secrets. But I would have to look more into that, like green eyes, where I'm not woo woo. I don't really know a lot about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I've heard those terms, and I can't think of anything other than watchers. You know, what I think of them as a referee or somebody to make sure that. I don't know. Maybe that's something we'll take a look at in the future. But all right. Thanks, Sam. Rise and Shine says, hi, Sam and Rudy. Just wondering what the future of the plant marijuana will be. I've heard in the news it could fight COVID. Thanks.
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so. It fights a lot of other things or works as a treatment for a lot of things. But nope, sorry. It's coming up a big zero for COVID. You'll have to find another reason, Rise and Shine, to smoke a blunt. Sorry.
All right. Next question from Barton Tom. And actually, next meetup, we're going to have a story from Barton. So we're looking forward to that here at the end of the month. But Barton says, Sam, can you tell us a little about Merlin, the wizard, teacher, scientist in King Arthur's court in England? Does his laboratory or office still exist?
Wasn't Merlin and all that story, wasn't that a fantasy?
I think it was. I wonder if he was based on or inspired by somebody. I'm just looking. He is a fictional figure prominently featured in the legend of King Arthur and best known as an enchanter or wizard. His usual depiction based on an amalgamation of historic and legendary figures was introduced in the 12th century by British author Geoffrey of Monmouth. Geoffrey combined earlier tales of a couple other things to come up with this character. So, but Sam, do you think there is a place like Merlin's Magic Lab that exists in, you know, maybe, you know, John Dee is a character that somewhat resembles Merlin that we talked about tonight. Do you think there is some sort of secret lab where some of these people that studied, you know, alchemy and things like that, does something like that still exist in Europe?
No, but I want to comment on what Light Green Eyes says there. It's very interesting. I did get some knowings from that. Light Green Eyes says the Watcher was like a scary shadow person. And so that would be like the Mothman.
Right.
That would be, so the Mothman is real and they are, I consider them like elementals.
Okay.
Right. They're part of the in-between. They're definitely not angels. They're definitely not good, but they exist. Mm-hmm. Right. They exist in the in-between. So yeah, you were right to call. And then what they do is they gather when they see. There was that story about the Mothman prophecies, and that's a true story. And then the Mothman gathers where there's like a natural disaster. It's because they know there's no future or past or anything in the realm. Yeah. So they can see that there's things that are coming that haven't happened yet on the earth realm. And then they'll go and they'll gather, right? Because this is fascinating to them to see the light beings leaving their human body, right? Because I mean, they can never do that.
Interesting. They're not, okay. They're
Boston, right? So, yeah. And the gatekeeper was a tall being in my doorway. So that reminds me of the chief.
Right, the chief. And I should tell this story, okay, because we've mentioned it a few times, but my wife has a client, and when she is working on someone's energy, sometimes she'll start to sense, you know, beings that are around, kind of like their tribe. And one person that shows up for one of her clients is the chief, we call him, because he was kind of a Native American and the headdress. And he actually showed up for another client she had. Totally, people don't know each other, which is kind of interesting. But anyway, she was over when we were doing the last psychic meetup, this client of hers. And typically the chief sometimes shows up during these sessions. And I've come into the house before when she's been here, and I felt just really positive energy, like something there. And so, Sam, this is where that night, tell us about then what your experience was.
Well, I guess that what I found out from Teresa when I told her that I opened the door and there, and it was really tall being, and I looked up, I actually couldn't see the top of him. Uh-huh. Right. Cause like, even just his legs were up to like the top of my head. He was like really, really big. And anyways, and all I did was I just opened the door, but I didn't feel like it was a negative thing. I almost felt like he was guarding me. It was like, he was there and he noticed I was there. And then he stood at my door all night to make sure nothing got in. Right. And then when I opened the door, I was like, and then I just closed the door, right? I didn't walk into your kitchen to get with, so for those who don't know, I was staying at Rudy and Teresa's place when we were coming through, and we did the Rudy Psychic Meetup live in his living room. So
So that's funny. Yeah. So you didn't see him as an Indian, but you experienced him there. And it's interesting. And that's, you know, anyone who does this type of work, you know, she does do some cleansing, but you can have some of these things stick around. And I joked, I said, I think he was here to see who the VIP was, right?
Well, he knew that I needed protection, and I think that he's very helpful. And what I'm sure my husband thought was cool, he didn't say anything to me one way or the other, but for people sort of traveling with me, for somebody to say, oh, well, that I was treating the person yesterday who has the chief with her. And what, I mean, what are the statistical odds that you would have this person over? They have the chief with them. The chief comes with her, sees me at your house, stays on guard all night, right? And then when I'm opening the door, it's like he's still there. And I'm like, okay. I didn't know what was going on. I'll be straight up with you. Cause it's not like the people on the other side come to me ahead of time and tell me everything all the time, right? So sometimes this stuff can be a little bit unnerving, but like I said, I didn't feel unsafe or that it was bad or anything.
And did your son see anything when he was there? I forgot to ask you if he did.
Yes, he did. And he said that he would feel sometimes, like when we were out, he goes, I always felt like there would be like a foreboding. He had a foreboding feeling. And I think it was because of the grounds that you guys must have built on or near.
Yep.
Like some sort of native,
a lot of Indian reservation land, a lot of Native American in this area. Yeah.
Yeah. So he was feeling like that foreboding. And he says, Mom, he goes, it's kind of like, you know, that place we used to live at. He said, where those things in the woods. I'm like, oh yeah. Okay. And it was like, I never talked about the things in the woods. Right. But a neighbor of mine who claimed to have abilities, I wasn't sure if she was being truthful or not. But then when she mentioned about the things in the woods, she goes, oh yeah. She goes, I noticed you didn't like to walk up that part of the street. And she goes, is it because of the things in the woods? And I'm like, yes.
All right. Well, let's try. I'm glad for, like, Renice, thanks for giving that extra information. That was helpful and interesting. All right. So let's wrap it up here, Sam. We got a couple questions left. Hi, Sam and Rudy. What are the major energetic themes you see for this year? Shelves are becoming empty at a rapid rate here in Australia. They also have started jabs for 5 to 11-year-olds. Do you see the situation escalating very rapidly into violence here in Australia? Thanks.
Well, you know, I did see that the population would be united against their politicians. And I don't know how much violence that would include. I mean, people are very much into like demonstrating and stuff. I think that they would prefer not to give the politicians a reason to get out the big guns and stuff, even though the police officers, many of them will refuse to go against their neighbors. They'll be like, no, that's my son's teacher there. I'm not, you know, swinging a baton or throwing tear gas in her face. It's her right to go against this. That's not what we're paid for. They pay tax dollars. And, you know, so even the police will be on the side in most cases. And maybe it'll be a few situations will come up where the people are, you know, quite rough with their police officers, a couple of them, like they go after them or something, right? And then that sort of will shake them up saying, hey, you know, you don't want to be doing that because, you know, people, you know, these politicians, they have, you know, they have guards and they have somebody driving their car for them and people delivering food to them and this and that. But, you know, we're like out there flapping in the wind. So this is going to be the ideology there. So yeah, I do see things degrading rapidly. but I don't think it's going to be like this big chaos and riots going on and on for months and months. I think you're going to see that the politicians are going to be thrown out of power there, and new people are going to come in, and they're going to have their marching orders. No more jabs, no more vax. We're getting on with our lives, and we're going to let the chips fall where they may. You know, we are a much stronger society than when the Spanish flu swept around the world and killed all those people. And we're going to do a better job, but we're not going to be locking down society, because many more people are having problems with food shortages. And then the big thing is not being able to get medications. And if you have somebody who has mental illness, for example, and they need those medications, or they go right, you know, off the rocker, I mean, it just becomes, you know, such a tough time for them. So that's another thing that is going to push people to the edge, you know, with their politicians.
Angel B says, are the Anunnaki the reptilians, and are they still in charge of this planet?
No, the Anunnaki have long since left. They got what they needed, and they tried to drown the humans by causing a flood. Remember that? Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, a historical story that is the truth. And nope, they are not in charge of the planet. Like I said, they just left, and there's no such thing as reptilians. So whoever's, you know, blowing that smoke up your butt, you just ignore them. You just be like, nope, that's not true. And I put my Samantha Jane guarantee on that one.
All these Australian questions. It's midday in Sydney, I think, so that's why we're getting all these questions. Urbanot says, hey, Sam, apart from fires and food shortages, do you foresee issues with water shortages or water contamination here in Sydney or elsewhere in Australia in 2022?
I do see some drought, and the fires are coming back, but not to the exact same spots that they already were. So that's pretty much the area that it's going to suffer some water shortages. And I do think that Sydney is going to have a big problem with water as well. So be very careful what you're buying, where you're investing in your properties, because again, the worst thing that can happen to you is that you drop $2 million on a nice pad in Sydney, and then all of a sudden you can't get any water. I mean, that's going to be tough on you.
Okay. Thanks, Sam. But real quick, Huddle Queen did put in the comments, and this is a good point. With all the vax, the reactions, there is some indication that there's about 5% of the vaccine lots were tainted. They're coming from the same batch of vaccines. Sam, do you think there's any truth to that? That there were certain lots of the vaccine that are more damaging to people than just the vaccine in general? So, you know, it's, you don't need to be scared of the vaccine because it was just some of these bad lots that seem to be causing most of the damage.
Well, I mean, the majority of people who are having problems with the heart inflammation, again, are part of the unfortunate, very minuscule percentage. Like it wouldn't even be 1%.
Okay.
You know, that they're the ones that are going to have a bad, you know, it's like I said, it's, you know, you can get in your car that day and like Kid Totoro's friend, you can be killed in your car, you know, and so many of us have much higher odds of, you know, I had a much higher odd of going over the mountain on the way down here when I was driving. Oh my gosh, some of those 18 wheelers coming around the corner and their butt end is hanging. I'm just like, just over here, just hugging the edge of the road. Oh boy, that's a long way down. Good thing I got a Volvo. Yeah. You know, we might survive the plummet. But anyways, you have better odds of, you know, having something happen to you in your daily life, getting electrocuted, getting in an accident. People are just way too worried about this whole, you know, vaccine stuff. But yes, that's another hazard with the vaccination, is that there are going to be lots that are contaminated. And then you're going to have, you know, many more people having problems. But, you know, that goes straight across the board with everything else too.
Okay. All right, Sam. Well, great show tonight. Thanks for all your insight. And we'll look forward to Moose Meetup tomorrow. And we will see you back here in 2 weeks. And we'll have Barton joining us, hopefully.
Yeah, great. Looking forward to that. And thanks again, everybody, for hanging out. We'll see you at the weekly crypto review tomorrow. Bye for now.